This is the voice of the Trumpet Magazine. News, economy, politics, trends, discovery, health, family, the Bible, the future. This is Trumpet Hour.
Hello, welcome to Trumpet Hour. I'm Jeremiah Jacques, filling in for your usual host, Mr. Joel Hilliker. It's tough to turn on a radio or TV, or to open up a news site or a newspaper, without hearing about the various dangers that China poses to the United States. There's intellectual property theft on a scale hard to imagine. There are endless forced technology transfers and numerous other policies inconsistent with free and fair trade. Then there are also cyber attacks and countless spy scandals and immense propaganda campaigns. China also brags about buying American politicians and the elite Americans that it has in its pockets, going up to some of the highest echelons of U.S. government. And then China's rapidly growing military might poses increasing threats to America's cities and even its space-based assets. There's the coronavirus and infiltration of America's big tech industry. And this list could go on and on. But Trumpet Editor-in-Chief Gerald Fleury said in an October 28 episode of his Key of David program that there's one area where China has moved and is moving against America that's even more dangerous than all of these.
This China scandal may prove to be the biggest China scandal ever in the history of America, and even in the world in many respects. They took over almost immediately after we surrendered Panama and the Panama Canal.
On today's program, we're going to talk about the Panama Canal. We'll go through material from an upcoming new booklet that Mr. Fleury has written all about this. And we'll cover the astounding history of the canal's creation, just how many nations had tried and failed to dig it, and then what a colossal victory it was for America to finally accomplish. We'll discuss the military significance of the canal to America and how crucial it was to the country's projection of power. And we'll discuss America's surrender of the canal that Mr. Fleury just mentioned there and how China immediately maneuvered in. And we'll take a close look at all of this in light of the prophecies of the Bible to see what this means for the future of America and the world. So let's go ahead and jump into this fascinating story that begins back in the 1520s, 500 years ago this decade. That's when Charles V was King of Spain, and he was also Emperor of the Holy Roman Empire. And a great deal of Charles's wealth came from what they called at that time the New World. Fleets of ships would sail from Spain all the way down around the southern tip of Latin America, or maybe through the Strait of Magellan, and then they would sail up to what we now call Peru and Ecuador, there on the west coast of Latin America. And they'd load up with tons of gold and silver. Then the ships would turn around and sail all the way back down, cross under that southern tip of Latin America again, and then they would cross the Atlantic and finally bring that gold and silver back to Spain and to Charles V. Well, it didn't take long before Charles grew frustrated with just how long these voyages were taking. And so he studied the map and he saw that skinny little sliver of land that connects North America to South America. And he said, let's slice through that narrow place there. That way, the ships will have thousands of miles fewer that they have to sail for each voyage. So Charles ordered his men to conduct feasibility studies for it. And several of his leading conquistadors and navigators and engineers spent a lot of time studying the Isthmus of Panama and surveying where the best place to dig would be. Several different routes were proposed, but ultimately they all decided that the task of slicing the continents apart was too much for them, and all of the plans were abandoned. For the next century and a half, no one thought seriously about trying to dig through the Isthmus of Panama. But then in the 1690s, it started to look enticing to the Kingdom of Scotland. Scotland at that time was an independent nation, and the Scottish saw that other countries, such as France and Spain and England, were all expanding their empires by colonizing places all over the world. The Scots didn't want to be left behind by this trend, so they decided to try to establish a colony of their own in Panama. They gathered up about a fifth of Scotland's wealth and 2,500 Scotsmen, and they sailed to Panama. They established a colony there and called it New Caledonia, and the plan was for it to become a gateway between the Atlantic and Pacific Oceans. But it didn't take them long to see that their plan had some problems. The mountains, especially on Panama's western side, were far steeper than expected. So whether the Scots wanted to build an overland trade route or try to dig through the isthmus, the topography was too much. So 2 years and about 2,000 dead Scotsmen later, the project was abandoned. This unsuccessful attempt plunged Scotland into such severe financial trouble that the Scots ended up entering into a union with their neighbor, the Kingdom of Britain. The purpose of the union was to stabilize Scotland after they lost so much in the failed Panama venture. And that was when the independent sovereign state of Scotland lost its autonomy. And ever since, it has been a part of the United Kingdom. For another 100 years or so, all was quiet on the Panamanian front. But in the early 1800s, a German explorer named Alexander von Humboldt set his sights on that narrow slice of land. Von Humboldt successfully mapped out plans for several different routes through Panama and some other parts of Central America, and these plans were considerably more detailed than any previously produced. But ultimately, those designs too came to nothing. Well, another 80 years or so went by, and then the French decided that it was their turn in Panama. The French had recently enjoyed a major victory with the Suez Canal there in Egypt, and they thought they could repeat that success in Panama. Ferdinand de Lesseps, the Frenchman who had completed the Suez, was put over the effort. He also enlisted the help of Gustave Eiffel, who had built the famous tower in Paris, and who had also helped build the Statue of Liberty. Thanks largely to these heavy hitters, the French got further than anyone else ever had. In 1881, after much deliberation and planning, they arrived in Panama, and the French actually started digging. But after about 8 years, Panama's rocky terrain and an abundance of floods and landslides, along with a shortage of funds and endless hordes of disease-carrying mosquitoes, crushed the French attempt. By that time, the French had spent the modern equivalent of $6 billion, and they had watched malaria, yellow fever, and treacherous working conditions send more than 22,000 laborers to their graves. After France's failure, many thought the dream was dead. Journalist Edouard Drumont wrote at the time that the isthmus had become nothing more than an immense boneyard. Likewise, the October 1889 National Geographic said it was all over. It said, quote, "The French people have seen the scheme fail under Lesseps, in whom they had the most unbounded confidence, and the canal will remain, as it is now, the most gigantic failure of the age." End quote. It truly was a gigantic failure, and it seemed that the goal of building an interoceanic canal would remain beyond the reach of all nations. But in the early 1900s, another player entered the picture and proved the naysayers spectacularly wrong. In 1903, U.S. President Theodore Roosevelt convinced Panama to declare independence from Colombia, which it had been a province of, and he signed a landmark treaty with the newly independent nation of Panama. America then paid France the modern equivalent of $1.2 billion for its equipment and excavations. And then the U.S. paid the Panamanians an initial payment worth the modern equivalent of $300 million. And then America went down and started digging. In 1906, Roosevelt personally visited Panama to inspect the progress. This marked the first time in history that a sitting U.S. president made a diplomatic trip abroad. Seeing the sheer scale of the work being done by the men there deeply moved Roosevelt. During his trip, he said, "It shall be in the future enough to say of any man, he was connected with digging the Panama Canal to confer the patent of nobility on that man." So Roosevelt truly believed in this project. Here's Mr. Fleury once again from that October 28, 2020 episode of the Key of David program.
Theodore Roosevelt was the first president to really see that America should be a world power. A world power. And he acted like America was a world power and not a colony of Europe, which it had been in the past. Just a colony of Europe. And he wasn't satisfied with that at all.
So Roosevelt believed that digging a canal through Panama would make it clear to the world that America was a great power. And he worked tirelessly on this project. And after 10 years of innovation and back-breaking toil, after U.S. taxpayers had provided hundreds of millions of dollars, after more than 5,600 men had died, and after removing enough dirt to bury all of Manhattan to a depth of 12 feet, the Americans succeeded where so many others had failed. They realized the 400-year-old dream that others had thought impossible. They sliced North America and South America apart, mingling the waters from the Atlantic and Pacific Oceans. Before the Panama Canal was dug, few human endeavors had ever aimed to transform the basic topography of the planet. Yes, men had accomplished many engineering marvels, transcontinental railways, mammoth dams and bridges, breathtaking royal residences, but none had done anything as foundational as slicing apart the very continents. And it's hard to overstate just how huge the impact of the Panama Canal was. Ships no longer had to take the long, dangerous route around South America. The Panama Canal is only 50 miles long, but it slashes 8,000 miles off of that trip. It cut so much off the time required to ship goods between the Pacific and the Atlantic, or from one U.S. coast to the other. But the Panama Canal didn't just serve the people of the United States.
It not only served America, but it opened up free trade and all kinds of service and blessings to the whole world. And America was looked on favorably because of that, and it really was an unparalleled spectacle in this world, a wonderful creation.
The historian David McCullough wrote about just how great this wonderful creation was in his book, The Path Between the Seas. He wrote, quote, "The creation of the Panama Canal was far more than a vast, unprecedented feat of engineering. The 50 miles between the oceans were among the hardest ever won by human effort and ingenuity, and no statistics on tonnage or tolls can begin to convey the grandeur of what was accomplished. It was a profoundly important historic event and a sweeping human drama not unlike that of war." In Time magazine from December 27, 1999, one of the greatest foreign policy experts, the late Charles Krauthammer, said building this strategic jewel that was the Panama Canal launched America ascending to the rank of great power. The canal was a major part of making America great. It was a great blessing to the U.S. and to other nations and peoples. That's clear partly by the 340 million tons of cargo that transit the canal each year. That includes many material products that we all use on a daily basis. But of course, as McCullough said, no statistics on tonnage or tolls can really convey just how incredible this feat was. And America was looked on favorably because of opening up that huge time saver and money saver and accomplishing just such a marvel of engineering. It was an unparalleled spectacle, a wonderful creation, and a great victory in American history.
Our greatest foreign policy success may have been the building of the Panama Canal.
Wow, America's greatest foreign policy success. That's an astounding statement. Well, we're going to take a short break, and when we come back, we'll look at the military importance of the Panama Canal to America. Just how valuable it was in the context of security and projection of power. And then later, we'll look at the other side of that, what the loss of the canal means for America's security. And we'll see how all of this propels the prophecies of the Bible forward. We'll be right back.
This is the voice of the Trumpet News Magazine. You're listening to Trumpet Hour.
Beyond economics, the Panama Canal was also of immense military value for the United States. To understand, consider this history. In early 1898, years before the canal was built, the United States battleship Maine exploded off the coast of Cuba. This was a major event. 260 American officers and other men were killed, and the occurrence ended up igniting the Spanish-American War. America didn't have a huge navy at this time, and just after the explosion, military leaders wanted to get one of the country's few true battleships on the scene as fast as possible. They decided to send America's newest and most advanced warship, the USS Oregon. But the trouble was, at the time, the Oregon was anchored in San Francisco Bay. To make its way to Cuba, the ship traveled down the coast of California, then continued south past Mexico, past Guatemala, El Salvador, Honduras, Nicaragua, Costa Rica, Colombia, Ecuador, Peru, and then past thousands of miles of Chile. Then, near the southern tip of South America, it crossed through the Straits of Magellan and then crossed over to the Atlantic Ocean. The USS Oregon then began the journey up South America's eastern side. It sailed north past Argentina, past Uruguay, Brazil, French Guiana, Suriname, Guyana, and Venezuela, and it made several time-consuming and perilous refueling stops on this long journey. Then finally, the warship entered into the Caribbean Sea and made its way to Cuba. The trip for the USS Oregon during this time of emergency and war was 12,000 miles long. It required 4,100 tons of coal. And even though the Oregon maintained remarkable speeds of up to 14 knots for most of the trip, it still took 68 days to reach its destination, where it helped America win the Battle of Santiago de Cuba. Had a canal across the Isthmus of Panama existed at that time, the journey would have been only 4,000 miles, and perhaps taken as little as 3 weeks. This event showed the U.S. just how militarily important it was to dig a canal through Central America. And it was a big factor in motivating the U.S. to get down there and accomplish what so many nations had failed to do. McCullough wrote about this, stating, quote, "As a demonstration of the military importance of the canal, the race of the Oregon had been made to order." Historian A.B. Feuer also affirms this. He wrote, "The trip itself advertised to the public, as well as to the military, as nothing else could have, the strategic necessity for building a canal across the Central American Isthmus." So it's no wonder, then, that once Theodore Roosevelt greenlighted the canal project, it was the U.S. military that supplied much of the labor and the engineers and the security during construction. And as they dug the canal, they were simultaneously constructing military bases alongside it. The first Atlantic military fort became operational in 1914. That's the same year the canal officially opened. And then the first U.S. military base on the Pacific side opened just 2 years later. And the fortifying of this area didn't stop there. By the time America entered World War II, the nation had 9 operational military forts at each end of the canal, and several inland installations along its path. These included bases for the Army, Air Force, and Navy. There were ports, airstrips, artillery corps forts, submarine hubs, naval air stations, tank farms, long-range radar posts, medical facilities, communication stations, and much more. The American military presence covered almost 90,000 acres, and it included more than 5,420 buildings. It was all worth an estimated $4 billion. At the height of World War II, 65,000 U.S. troops were stationed throughout Panama, and it all gave the U.S. an invaluable strategic ability to move warships, materiel, and troops quickly from one ocean to another, so that it could project power and respond more agilely to threats around the globe. GlobalSecurity.org discussed how vital this was to America during World War II. They wrote, quote, "When the United States found itself enmeshed in a two-ocean war, the Panama Canal suddenly became the most strategic point on the globe." The single most strategic point, that's astounding. And since the canal was central to military strategy, the U.S. implemented several measures during World War II to safeguard it. Systems were installed in the lock chambers to detect underwater mines. Commercial traffic was limited to one side of the dual locks, and all ships underwent rigorous inspection before transiting. The U.S. also brokered deals with neighboring nations to let America build or enlarge naval installations in order to form a protective ring around the canal. America didn't want to take any chances with this strategic jewel. And history shows that all of these protective efforts paid off. The Axis powers saw how well guarded the canal was, and even though they wanted badly to destroy it during the war, they never risked an attack on the Panama Canal. And it wasn't just World War II. During the Cold War, the Panama Canal remained integral to the U.S. military. The Southern Command kept its headquarters there and oversaw components of the Navy, Air Force, Army, and Marine Corps from the canal. This presence was vital in America's efforts to promote freedom and democracy in the Western Hemisphere and to counter the spread of communism. So when you look at the way building the canal launched America to the rank of great power, and when you consider the global economic blessings and the U.S. military advantage that resulted from it, the truth is undeniable. This maritime gateway, or Seagate, was of unmatched importance for America. Here's Mr. Fleury once again on his October 28th Key of David episode about the Panama Canal.
And no other Seagate stands out like the Panama Canal, not even close.
Wow, no maritime gateway on Earth, or Seagate, was as important to the U.S. as the Panama Canal. That's a powerful statement. And in light of the history we've covered, it's easy to see the proof of it. But as we continue through the history, we'll see that tragically, America's control over this strategic jewel, this most important Seagate, was not to last. The people of Panama benefited immensely from the canal that America built in their country and from the surrounding U.S.-controlled canal zone. It put their nation on the map and significantly enriched its people. But some of the people chose not to see it as a blessing, and they became resentful about America's presence. The Globalist wrote about this in 2014, stating, quote, "Rich Panamanians complained of not being able to sell enough to the canal zone, while poor Panamanians complained of everything else." And then it says, "The demands from the Panamanians intensified after the Cuban Revolution of 1959. In that bloody revolution, communists led by Fidel Castro seized control of Cuba. And by 1964, some Marxist-Leninist influence had spilled over from Castro's Cuba into Panama. The communists inflamed that resentment that some Panamanians were already feeling toward America, and soon Panamanian students and what were almost certainly communist instigators started rioting in the canal zone. That year, 1964, these riots caused the deaths of more than 20 people. Panama's government temporarily broke off ties with the U.S. over this, and the administration of American President Lyndon B. Johnson came under heavy pressure to hand the canal over. During a 1964 speech about the Panama Canal and clashes in the country, President Johnson said, quote, "Circumstances change and history shapes new attitudes and expectations." And then he promised that America would draw up a long-range plan of major changes for the canal. That long-range plan culminated in a terrible deal signed in 1977. That's when Panama's dictator, Omar Torrijos, signed new treaties with U.S. President Jimmy Carter that replaced the treaty that Theodore Roosevelt had signed with Panama back in 1903. Under the terms of the new treaty, Carter agreed for the canal to be transferred to Panama. Here's Mr. Fleury once again.
President Carter made a treaty and gave this Panama Canal to Panama. Just gave it to them because these political thugs running that little country threatened to riot and cause all kinds of problems and disrupt the trade through the Panama Canal. And so President Carter just gave the whole Panama Canal to him. And two-thirds of the American people even didn't agree with that, although they didn't do much of anything about it. But that was an undemocratic move. It really, many people think, was unconstitutional, and it happened. And he gave all this away, really the probably the greatest symbol that America has ever had of its world power. And here we had this canal that just opened up the whole world to us and to the rest of the world in many ways. It was a service to this world.
So President Carter signed that treaty with Torrijos in 1977, and then the final phase of the Torrijos-Carter Treaty took effect on December 31st of 1999. That's when the U.S. relinquished all remaining control of the canal to Panama. But there's a lot more to this story than the world, and especially America, understand. It turns out that America wasn't relinquishing control just to Panama. Even before the final phase of the handover, an event happened that should have shaken America, but it was barely noticed. In March of 1997, the giant Chinese corporation, Hutchison Whampoa, took control of the American-constructed ports at each end of the Panama Canal. This company is a Fortune 500 firm, and it claims to be privately owned, but evidence shows that it is an ideological clone of the Chinese Communist Party, or the CCP, that rules China. Like most large Chinese companies, Hutchison Whampoa is nestled deeply in the CCP's pocket, and it's entirely beholden to the party. In 2015, this company merged with another Chinese firm, and they became CK Hutchison Holdings. But it remains a tool of the CCP, and it remains in position to control who can enter and exit the Panama Canal. Any student of military strategy should see the startling possibilities that this terrible Chinese deal opened up. An enterprise of China, the nation possessing the world's largest army, which is aggressively expanding its Navy and Air Force, took control of the major sea transit gateway between East and West. Imagine if China were to suddenly sink a large ship in the canal, or to otherwise sabotage it. The nation could deny the U.S. Navy access through this strategic choke point, and the wartime implications of that are chilling. And now that China has a solid commercial foothold at the canal, what would stop it from opening military bases there and moving in its troops, submarines, warships, and fighter jets? Now, it is true that the Torrijos-Carter Treaty includes a clause demanding permanent neutrality and operation of the canal. And the treaty makes clear that anyone trying to attack the seaway or build a military presence there would face an immediate military response from America. But what would happen if the Chinese Communist Party timed such a move prudently, waiting until the U.S. is suffering from serious internal disorder, or waiting until China's partners are antagonizing America elsewhere? Then, how strongly would the U.S. military be able to respond? Christopher R. O'Day is an adjunct fellow at the Hudson Institute. He wrote in 2018 that we should expect China to militarize its various commercial ports. He wrote, quote, Chinese state-owned shipping and construction companies have assembled a global network of commercial ports that can be readily converted to military bases, end quote. O'Day then called particular attention to the Panama Canal as a place where this could quickly happen. And he wrote, quote, China clearly intends to militarize commercial facilities. If we look at what China accomplished in the African nation of Djibouti, we should see that O'Day is exactly right. There, China originally said its presence was strictly to resupply Chinese ships participating in anti-piracy patrols in the Red Sea and the Gulf of Aden. But after a few years, China announced that its site was a permanent naval base, and it deployed soldiers and warships to man it. Now the base in Djibouti is a pillar in China's global naval strategy. And now back to Panama. We've already seen the Chinese Navy making port visits nearby. In recent years, warships sailing under the red five-star Chinese flag have anchored off of Cuba and Venezuela. The U.S. Naval Institute wrote about these kinds of port calls in June of 2019 and said the Chinese will, quote, leverage their Latin American presence when they feel it necessary. So the trail's already blazed. Now China's just waiting for the time when it feels it is necessary. When the circumstances are right, China can move its military into Panama. Then it will not just be able to deny America transit through the canal, but it could use its presence there as a staging ground to attack the U.S. underbelly. With warships, submarines, and bombers only 90 miles from Miami, China would be well positioned for such attacks. After moving in warplanes or missiles, under the pretext of protecting its interests in Panama, much of the U.S. mainland would be well within striking distance. The potential threat to U.S. and world security posed by Panama's decision to let China run the canal is difficult to fathom.
Because immediately after this deal was made, China was taking over. Do you think that just was happenstance? Doesn't make sense. That isn't the way China operates at all. Do you think that's not going to be something that plagues us in the future? Where is our vision? Where is our world vision? We're so wrapped up in ourselves, we don't often even see what is happening.
With even just a little bit of vision, we can see the Chinese Communist Party's illegal trade practices. We can see its illegal takeover of the South China Sea and Hong Kong. We can see how it's pushing at the Indians and trying to take more land from them along their border. We can see their aggression against Taiwan and their predatory lending to small countries, using debt as a weapon to make them pawns in the grand Chinese game. With some vision, we can see that the Chinese Communist Party that runs China is not to be trusted. Their fruits show that they are ambitious in an evil and very dangerous way. And this is the power that seized the gateway that controls much of the flow of goods between the world's two greatest oceans. This all happened through that terrible deal struck by President Carter and the Panamanian government, and America stood by and let it all happen. We spoke earlier about the central role that Theodore Roosevelt played in digging the Panama Canal. And he once said, quote, if we stand idly by, if we shrink from the hard contests where men must win at hazard of their lives and at the risk of all they hold dear, then the bolder and stronger peoples will pass us by and will win for themselves the domination of the world. End quote. Roosevelt had the courage to act. He took risks. He didn't fear those who wanted to destroy America. But he did fear God. He wrote a famous book titled, Fear God and Take Your Own Part. Even the title says so much. Fear God and trust God and do your own part with courage. That's good advice. What would Roosevelt have thought of his successors in the U.S. government coming along and surrendering the strategic jewel that he and so many others hazarded so much to build? What would he think of them surrendering it so that bolder and stronger peoples in China could take a great leap toward domination of the world? A big part of the reason America surrendered the canal was fear of China or other potential aggressors. U.S. leaders calculated that a serious military threat would inevitably happen in Panama, and they wanted to get soldiers out of Panama to avoid such a clash. And then many acted like the canal was not so important all along. This was the opposite of the kind of courage that Roosevelt embodied and promoted, and it continues into today with few Americans being concerned about the canal. And Mr. Fleury says this is another sign that we've lost our world vision and are bogged down in the present. And he says that the overall picture makes clear that what happened with Panama is very dangerous, and that in the next few years, the world will see just how dangerous it was. Panama is already a massive victory for the Chinese Communist Party, and it's a great loss for the security of America and the world. And it's also proof of the prophecies of the Bible. So let's take a look now at some foundational prophecies that we've discussed on Trumpet Hour since our earliest episodes. These are prophecies that the late Herbert W. Armstrong made clear, especially in his book, The United States and Britain in Prophecy, which we're happy to send you a free copy of. Genesis 35:11 records a promise God made to Abraham's grandson, Jacob, whose name was changed to Israel. It says, "A nation and a company of nations shall be of you." The great nation mentioned here is the United States, and the company of nations is the British Empire. The fact that God fulfilled this promise to Jacob by blessing the U.S. and Great Britain can be proved in several ways, and you can read about those and prove them to yourself by ordering a free copy of the book just mentioned, The United States and Britain in Prophecy. This book shows how God fulfilled this prophecy mightily through Jacob's son Joseph and his descendants, who ultimately became the Americans and the British. Deuteronomy 28 and verse 52 shows that one specific way God promised to bless these two would be by giving them control over gates. These gates are the maritime ports and passages that world trade flows through, and even land gates in a few cases. And it's astounding to see just how complete America's and Britain's hold on these global gates came to be. At the height of British and American power in the 19th and 20th centuries, Britain possessed or controlled the Suez Canal, Gibraltar, Malta, the Dardanelles, the English Channel, the Gulf of Aden, the Andaman, the Nicobar Islands, Zanzibar, Cape Town, Sri Lanka, the Straits of Malacca, Singapore, Hong Kong, and the Falkland Islands. And then America possessed or controlled the Aleutians, the Hawaiian Isles, Midway, Guam, Wake Island, the Philippines, and of course, the Panama Canal. And the British and American navies kept sea lanes open through many other choke points around the globe. And Mr. Fleury stresses that Britain and the U.S. didn't gain all these strategic holdings because they were somehow better than other nations. He writes, quote, "God gave these awesome gifts to us. He gave them so we could virtually rule the world, but in a far more benevolent way than powers like China ever would." End quote. The fact that Britain and America acquired all these strategic oceanic locations itself proves that these nations are the descendants of Abraham's family. Mr. Armstrong wrote that the control we had over them proves that we must be modern Israel. So controlling all of these various gates was of immense value and importance, but one of them proved to be far more strategically important to America than all the others, and it is discussed specifically in your Bible in an astounding way. In Genesis 22:17, God says to Abraham, "In blessing I will bless you, and in multiplying, I will multiply your seed as the stars of the heaven and as the sand which is upon the seashore." This shows just how immense the family of Abraham would become, largely through his grandson Israel. And then God continues, "And your seed shall possess the gate of his enemies." Back in Deuteronomy 28, we saw the plural word gates used. That was correctly translated in the King James Bible from the plural Hebrew word sarika. But here in Genesis 22, It's from the singular construct of the word, the gate. It's just one. And which one is it that's being singled out here? Here's Mr. Fleury once again.
But here he says, and your seed shall possess the gate of his enemies. Well, now, which gate could that be? Before, God talked about all the gates, but now he talks about the gate. And I will submit to you that I don't believe there could be any other sea gate that could be called the gate except the Panama Canal, because it has served the world for so many years and was a great gift from God through his outstanding leader, Theodore Roosevelt, and America followed him.
Estimates published in 1934 calculated that the maximum traffic the Panama Canal could handle would be around 80 million tons of shipping per year. But by 2015, traffic was more than 340 million tons of shipping each year, quadruple the original maximum estimate. In 2010, the 1 millionth ship crossed the Panama Canal. That was 1 million ships in less than 100 years. Think of the time and money saved by these ships that didn't have to sail all the way around South America. That adds up to billions of dollars worth of savings. And that savings is passed on to anyone who buys products shipped through the Panama Canal, which is almost all of us. And it goes beyond economics. As mentioned earlier, the Panama Canal helped guarantee the security of the world, especially in the Western Hemisphere. It positioned the U.S. to better police the globe and to keep powerful, aggressor nations from running roughshod over weak countries. This canal has served the world for decades. It was a great gift, and as Mr. Fleury said there, it is clearly the gate that God speaks of in Genesis 22:17. In Deuteronomy 28:52, God says that if the descendants of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob refused to turn to him, then he would cause their enemies to take control over the very same gates that he had previously blessed them with. It says, quote, "And he shall besiege you in all your gates throughout all your land, which the Lord your God has given you." And it's important to notice that this is about the end time, the time that we're now living in. Genesis 49:1 talks about what would happen to the sons of Jacob, or Israel, in the last days. And this passage here in Deuteronomy about the nations of Israel losing the gates is largely about that same time frame. This is also in the context of America losing pride in its power. God tells those same descendants of Israel in Leviticus 26:19, "I will break the pride of your power." And this too is a prophecy. It says that if the people of America and Britain don't look to God, the God who gave them so many gifts and blessings and who made great powers of them, then he would reverse those blessings. And we've already seen them fading quickly away, especially for Britain. In Mr. Fleury's new booklet, he writes, quote, "Did anybody ever ask why? God doesn't give blessings like this and take them away unless there's a great reason. Do we know what it is? A big part of the answer is ingratitude toward God and turning away from him. Our sins have made us a weak spectacle before the world. The Bible makes clear that God will continue to break the pride of our power if we don't heed him and be thankful for all his blessings." End quote. Going back to Mr. Herbert W. Armstrong, throughout his many years of writing and teaching, he witnessed the UK's loss of control over the Suez Canal, Singapore, Cyprus, the Cape of Good Hope, and many other gates. Based on the scriptures we've been discussing, Mr. Armstrong forecast that the trend would only accelerate. In 1980, he wrote, quote, "As the pride of our power continues to be broken, as the British continue to lose their foreign sea gates and possessions around the earth, as America signs away ownership of the Panama Canal, this focal prophecy alone represents giant proof as to where the modern remnant of the peoples of Israel resides today." End quote. When Mr. Armstrong died in 1986, the U.S. still controlled the gate, the Panama Canal. But some 14 years after his death, America surrendered it, proving Mr. Armstrong right. Mr. Flurry points out that our broken pride in our power is why the people of the U.S. are not stirred by what happened with that Panama surrender. And he writes, "How long must God curse us before we awaken? That's the big question each of us must answer. The decision is in our hands nationally and individually." And then he goes on writing, "The whole world is watching. Unless we repent before God, they will see our tragic collapse. And the Bible's prophecies show that China's grip on the Panama Canal could play a major role in that tragic collapse." End quote. Well, we're going to take another short break here, and then we'll launch into the final segment of today's episode about another prophecy shedding light on how that tragic collapse will happen, and about the good news on the other side of it. We'll be right back.
This is Trumpet Hour with Joel Hilliker.
Some 2,700 years ago, God inspired the prophet Isaiah to sound the alarm about a massive trade bloc that would form in the end time. In Isaiah 23:3, Isaiah calls it a mart of nations. Verse 1 shows that one of the lead nations in this trade bloc would be a power called Chittim. In Mr. Flurry's booklet, Isaiah's End Time Vision, he shows that Chittim, or Kittim, is an ancient name for modern China. And then Isaiah 23 says one of the other leading powers in the trade bloc will be Tyre. And Mr. Flurry shows that this name, Tyre, represents the commercial center of modern Europe. So China and Europe. And then a related passage in Ezekiel 27 mentions ancient names for modern Russia and Japan, showing that they too will join in this mart. This is an astounding prophecy, and it connects closely to the warning in Deuteronomy 28:52 about America and Britain being besieged by their enemies. The Mart of Nations prophecy makes clear who exactly those enemies besieging the U.S. and the U.K. will be. The Bible contains many prophecies of an end-time European power attacking America and Britain, which you can learn all about in our free book, The Holy Roman Empire in Prophecy. And when those prophecies are placed alongside the Mart of Nations prophecies and other Bible passages, it's clear that the early phases of that attack will be mainly an economic besiegement. Europe, China, Russia, Japan, and other nations will lock America out of world trade. The Mart of Nations prophecy also indicates that the partnerships between Europe and Latin America and between China and Latin America will strengthen dramatically in the years ahead. With common religion, culture, and languages, Europe already wields considerable influence in Latin America, and China and Russia are amassing great influence in Panama, Venezuela, Cuba, Nicaragua, and elsewhere. This makes the prophecies about America and Britain falling under the siege come alive in the pages of your Bible. This deepening influence will put the Asians and the Europeans in place, literally, to besiege America in its gates. These chilling prophecies point to bleak days ahead for America and some of its allies, but Bible prophecy shows that the Mart of Nations and the terrible conflict it'll unleash will actually be used by God as loving correction. And it shows that this besiegement will be immediately followed by the most hope-filled era in man's history. In Isaiah's End Time Vision, Mr. Flurry writes, "Two great trading blocks are positioning themselves to control the world. But that trading partnership won't last long. Soon they'll clash just before Jesus Christ returns and destroys both of them." We'll finish the episode up with one other powerful quote from Mr. Flurry's upcoming new booklet about the Panama Canal and all that it meant for America and what the surrender of it now means for the U.S. and China and the world. An excerpt from this booklet will be published in the February 2021 issue of the Philadelphia Trumpet, so please keep an eye out for it there, and also keep an eye out for the publication of the full booklet as well. In one very inspiring section toward the close of this booklet, Mr. Flurry writes, "Christ will return to earth bringing a swift end to all of mankind's destruction. He'll usher in an era of peace and prosperity for the peoples of Panama, China, the U.S., and all the world. We should thank God daily that beyond the bad news is the best news we could possibly hear. Jesus Christ will govern all nations. Finally, man will learn a lesson far more valuable than all the sea gates in the world: what it truly means to fear God and take your own part.
Been listening to Trumpet Hour on Trumpet Radio 101.3 KPCG and online at kpcg.fm. Understand your world.